Hi everyone, this is Evan Murray with Music Industry Insights. You can write me at evan@musicindustryins.net, evan@musicindustryins.net. You can write me questions, comments, request podcasts, do whatever you want. Let me know how your day is. The podcast that you are listening to now is about South Korea. My guest is Patrick Connor. He is from England. Patrick has been living in South Korea for almost two decades. He's been working in the music industry there for just as long. He has a couple of his own companies. He has worked in export, exporting South Korean acts. He's also done import. He's taken bands in and toured them in South Korea. Patrick actually had booked a band that I gave him from Canada months before the pandemic hit, and obviously we had to cancel everything. So Patrick is very active in the music industry in South Korea. Patrick is also the main booker for the Busan Rock Festival. All of these details, and I mean a lot of details, are in this conversation. You're going to learn about the streaming sites in South Korea. You're going to learn about how the independent music scene works in South Korea. You're going to learn about the festivals in South Korea. You're going to learn about the jobs that Patrick does in South Korea. So this is quite immersive. Now, obviously, I understand that Patrick is not a native of South Korea. But when we talk about business and we talk about industry, how long does it take somebody to really figure out the nuts and bolts of a place? I mean, I've been in Taiwan for on and off for 3 years. I still don't really understand the nuts and bolts of this place. And what I mean by nuts and bolts is, like, I don't understand how it is completely organized or how it completely works or what the goals are or the determinations of the music industry people here. But Patrick living in South Korea for almost 20 years, I think that's a bit of a different story. And again, Patrick is working with one of the biggest festivals in South Korea, and he has worked with some of the biggest festivals in South Korea as well. He's a really knowledgeable guy, really nice guy, and I think this conversation is going to do you a lot of justice if you have any interest in South Korea at all, in developing, touring, marketing, understanding how that marketplace functions and works. So, without further ado, take what you can from this, extract the information, and most of all, enjoy it.
Patrick, nice to see you. And can you introduce yourself and just tell me a bit about the work you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I'll give it a go. I guess the thing we should make clear right from the start is I am here in South Korea, but I'm actually from the UK. So I'm a UK citizen. I've been based over here in South Korea for the last 15 years now. I initially came here as an English teacher, and about 7 years ago now, transitioned over to work in the music scene.
All right, so that's pretty generalized in itself. What are you doing in South Korea? How the hell did you get there? What's going on there?
Well, we'll skip all the English teaching stuff, seeing as that's not relevant. I got into the music industry the same way as most people that I know, I guess. I used to play in a band. We weren't very good. I ended up organizing concerts for us, because that was the only way we could get concerts. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up organizing concerts for other people. It's about 7 years ago, a friend and I started up a bilingual webzine. The idea was to promote Korean independent music both here in Korea and abroad, which is why it was bilingual. But I primarily here in Korea, to be honest, there's not much media that concentrates on independent music. So we started a webzine to solve that problem.
Okay, wait a second. So you were in Korea, you're already in South Korea for 8 years before you got involved in the music industry?
Yeah, I mean, I was always out and about watching music and stuff, but yeah, just, you know, that was just my evening out as opposed to a job.
So what was it like? Before you even started touching the music industry, you were in South Korea for 8 years. Did you fall in love with the culture? Did you fall in love with the nightlife? Like, what aspects of being in South Korea made you want to stay?
It's a good question. I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously, my life out here ever since I got here has been awesome and loads of fun, lots of great experiences, met lots of awesome people. You know, the plan was just to be here 1 or 2 years, but I just found myself enjoying life, and ultimately, I suppose, saw no reason to leave. So I just kept extending for a year and another year and another year. And here we are 15 years later.
15 years. I mean, that's a quarter of my lifetime. No, that's more. That's a third of my lifetime. I'm not that old yet. Even so, I mean, 15 years ain't nothing to laugh about. That's for sure. You're South Korean by all means. You know, 15 years inside of a society. I mean, you could probably write a book about it, right? I've been to South Korea twice now, and one of the things that I was shocked is how beautiful it is. Nobody ever really talks about how amazingly beautiful the South Korean peninsula is, but it absolutely is. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's very easy to come here and get stuck in the cities, but if you can get out into the countryside, and you don't need to go far to do that. I mean, there's a big national park on the edge of Seoul that you can get to by subway. You jump off the subway and you're straight out onto the hiking trails and up into the mountains. So it's pretty spectacular.
I stayed in a hotel I stayed in a place in Seoul when I went my second half of my trip. Outside of that university area, I could see the mountain range from there. Mm. I thought that was pretty crazy. Let's talk about your music career there. So are you a musician yourself? Did you come from a band background, or are you kind of a music business guy?
I have played the drums. I wouldn't describe myself as a musician.
Okay, so you're...
I played drums in three bands out here. But really, you know, it's more of a hobby than it was ever taking it too seriously.
Okay, tell me about so you started off with a webzine, and that was meant to, you know, shop Korean, like South Korean talent, I guess, right? Like you were identifying that. And how did that, tell me about the evolution of that. Like, how did this start growing into these other businesses that you have now? What was the process there?
I suppose off the back of running that website for a few years, you know, we did lots of interviews, featured articles, playlists, the usual kind of online webzine stuff. But off the back of that, I ended up helping out at a showcase festival here called Zandari Festival, which most people in the industry would know at the moment. So I started helping out there for a couple of years. At first we were just involved as media partners, and then later on we became more involved and helped with the international booking, and also ran a couple of stages there. And then I guess it was really off the back of that and the contacts that I made there that sort of allowed this. So it was after working there and after making contacts there that we started to do small international shows and tours over here in Korea. And then, you know, once we started to build up a bit of a resume of smaller acts, we started to get access to bigger and bigger international artists. And so the international promotion side of it grew from there, I think.
So So how, like, you didn't obviously just like learn about the music industry overnight. I mean, you weren't just a teacher and then you're running an online magazine and it, you automatically know how a conference works and how to book bands and how to do all this stuff. Like, what about that? Like, was there a process? How did you learn? Who mentored you? Like, where did you get your information?
We pretty much did it the way you said first, overnight. Basically, once we managed to get a small grant here in Korea for startup businesses. So that gave us a little bit of financial help to get going, I guess. And then, I mean, yeah, really, we just winged it. I mean, I had a bit of experience, as I said, from Sandri Festival. And we basically, what we did is we rebooked a few of the smaller artists that had come to play at Sandri. We rebooked them for tours later on that year or the following year. And sort of just built up our experience working with smaller acts. And then we got a bit of a lucky break a bit later on. There's a famous artist in the UK called Joss Stone. I mean, she was super famous when I was a kid. And she had decided she wanted to do a world tour playing in every single country in the world. And I just ended up on an email thread somehow. Someone had copied me in and said, oh, you know, this guy works in South Korea. He might be able to help you out. So we ended up
randomly doing this show. This happened randomly.
Pretty much. It was off a contact from Sandri. You know, I'd met someone at Sandri and they'd said, oh, this guy's working in South Korea, he might be able to help you out. And so we ended up doing this Joss Stone show here in Seoul. And of course, once you've got one name, you know, on your history, it's much easier to approach other agents and stuff, right?
It starts building. Yeah. So I mean, you do one.
So we've done a bunch of small. We've done a bunch of small shows, then we got this much bigger show, and suddenly, you know, we sort of looked more like a legitimate prospect, I suppose, for other agents. And so then we managed to start getting, you know, sort of slightly bigger and bigger international acts over.
Okay, now tell me, so nowadays, what are you doing? Like, you have, there's not just one company, you're doing a couple things now. So let's talk about what you're doing right now. Let's talk about how that formed a little bit. And then let's talk about how people are able to work with you. So let's just go through a process here. So you've diversified. Like, from what I know, you have two companies, I think, running at this point. And you're also the international booker for a big festival in Busan Rock Festival. So let's talk about this stuff.
Okay, so that promotion side of things that we were just talking about there, that's the arm of the company that we call Hijinks. And aside from doing the headline shows with international acts, we have a couple of other projects there as well. We have a tour exchange project, which we've done three or four times, where we take an artist, for example, from the UK, pair them up with a Korean band, do a sort of 6 or 7 show tour in the UK, followed up by a 6 or 7 show tour here in Korea. We also do another project called Focus Asia, where we try and bring in sort of rising talent from Asia and, you know, like give them their first shows over here in Korea. And as you just mentioned, through Hijinks, we also book the international acts for Busan International Rock Festival. So that's the sort of promotions booking side of the company. And then on the other side, I have it's called Beeline Records. I suppose it's a sort of label services company is the best way to look at it. And that really came from doing all these smaller shows and the Focus Asia stuff and needing a platform through which to promote these bands and help get them some PR, especially over here on the Korean streaming platforms and stuff. You really need a local company to help you out, to maximize your exposure. So we started offering PR services to acts we were working with. And then the next logical step through there was also to start managing some local acts as well. So that's the kind of label PR services side of things.
Okay, so you're also working. Okay, so let's unpack this a bit even more. So you're helping South Korean artists get out outside of the world, right? You're helping them get to other countries and to find their international marketplace. So that's part of Hijinks. Is that correct? Or would it be a label service? Is that part of the...
Yeah, that would be.
So that these are... So this is... You're not working with random artists. This is exclusive opportunity then? Like, you are you signing bands that you're helping, or are you helping the government people find opportunity? How does that work?
It's a bit of case by case. So through Beeline, we currently we have one Korean artist signed to us exclusively, and we help them with everything from recording their albums to releasing it to finding tours and opportunities abroad.
You financially, know, you mean you're taking care of them inside of your label?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
That's
and
really
then
great.
On the other side of things, we have a couple of international artists that we work with exclusively just for their Korean distribution and PR.
Is that under Beeline as well?
Yeah. So Korea has, you know, slightly different streaming platforms to the rest of the world.
Melon, right? There's one called Melon.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And we do have Apple and Spotify, but they're not, they're certainly not the biggest streamers out here. So you need a little bit of a local touch, I guess, a little bit of local support to sort of help finesse your way onto some of these platforms.
Well, let's talk about that. So say if an export office comes to you, right? Say if, you know, like one of these music industry associations in Canada, or say Export Music Sweden comes to you and says, hey, we'd like to... We're interested in developing in South Korea. How do we do this, Patrick? Like, take us through some steps of how we go about doing something like this.
Korea, I don't have a lot of experience in other companies, but from what I've in other countries rather, but from what I've gathered thus far, Korea is wildly different to how most of the world operates. And the most important thing by far for artists wanting to come over here, aside from actually coming over here to play, is to get the music on the local streaming platforms. And, you know, like your worldwide distributors, they can throw your music up there. You can get on the big Korean streaming platforms, but it really comes with no follow-up. You know, quite often the profiles are empty. They don't even have a picture of the band. You know, it's a bit of a mess if you go down that route. So we always suggest to artists, especially at the start, to get a local company involved to help with the digital distribution. And it's not just sort of putting it up on the platforms. The local distribution companies here can also get you like featured spots on the big streaming sites and help get your music on the playlists and all of that kind of stuff, which your normal worldwide distributor won't have access to.
Right. And I mean, yeah, I don't like to cut corners. For the most part, I think these world distributors like DistroKid and CD, I personally think they're garbage because there is no real focus on them at all. It's kind of like, hey, let us do what you could do yourself and we'll just spam your music out there, you know? I know I shouldn't say they're garbage. They have their use. I mean, a lot of people starting out don't really know what they're doing, and let's just be honest, there's not like a music education class you can go to and you learn these things. This is, people are basically learning the music industry as they go, right? So, I mean, I understand that these businesses have a purpose. So I retract my statement that they're garbage. I just don't think that they're not focused, let's say, right? There's no focus with them, like you're talking about a company that will take you from step A to, you know, to the finish line, you know, trying to achieve a ultimate goal. So what happens is this. So I come to you, I say, hey, I want some bands to develop. You say, okay, you know, we have an infrastructure and we want to kind of, is it kind of like putting someone through a factory where it's like, you know, go into this and then it comes out this, and then go into this and it comes out this? Like, do you have protocol that you want to strictly follow, like an infrastructure, or are you kind of willing to like bend the rules and kind of look at things a little differently depending on the situation?
Yeah, well, we try and, so there's, there are not sort of many traditional music outlets here in Korea. So, you know, it's not just a case of firing out music to the classic music blogs or the music magazines or whatever, because most of them don't exist. So we always try and work on a sort of case-by-case basis for the artist. So, you know, for example, if an artist is particularly influenced by fashion, then we would try and link them up with fashion magazines or fashion blogs or fashion shows and that kind of stuff. Or, you know, if an artist's particularly into, I don't know, coffee or something, you know, then we try and link them up with, you know, certain branded coffee shops.
So there's, you're doing very conscious PR work where you're trying to establish, like, not only the music to sync it up on South Korean platforms that are meaningful and people will actually get the opportunity to listen to it, but you're also looking at the branding aspect to put it in South Korean culture as well, right?
Exactly.
So for you, you're trying to create a product that might be have some might have some actual monetary value. So is that kind of really important? Now, there's all kinds of ways to develop a project, you know, obviously. Like, there's one way where you fly into the country, you play the shows, you meet some people, you see what the hell is going on, and you make a decision if you want to be there or not. The other way is to kind of have a strategic plan. Now, when you build these strategic plans, how long are you developing these plans? Like, how much planning goes in? Are you talking about 3 months? Are you talking about 6 months? Talking about a year? Like, what kind of, and let's talk about the, not only that, but let's talk about if you're making one of these conscious marketing PR plans for the band. So say I'm coming to you, I say, listen, I want to brand my artist. I want people to know about these guys before we take the trip to South Korea. What kind of process is that, Patrick? Like, how long is that process? I mean, I know it depends if something sparks, right? If something sparks.
I mean, the longer.
Yeah.
Right. The longer, the better is always the case. I think for me, finding or establishing some kind of genuine interest in Korea from the artist is a key point to coming out here. Korean people really take note of artists that have a genuine interest in the country. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I've kind of gone off a little bit from your question.
No. Well, I mean, let's talk about this. I mean, it's a little bit like, I mean, this is kind of like generic, and that's good. So when you work with an artist, you want an artist to be interested in South Korea. Like, it's not, South Korea isn't a place where you just go to take photos and get video done and move on to China or Japan. Like, South Korea has a whole entire infrastructure and value system kind of in itself. Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of artists kind of approach us and they're like, oh, you know, well, we want to come over to Korea and play some shows. And that's great. I mean, everyone does, but why is always an important question. I think if it's just, oh, we want to tag on a Korean show to the end of a Japanese tour, then, you know, it works on some level. But I think if there's a genuine interest in the culture or the food or something out here to latch onto, that really helps with the marketing of that band and their music.
Well, I mean, I don't want to kind of bypass the elephant in the room. I mean, the most popular music in the world now comes out of Korea, right? Like, it's all this boy band, crazy. I guess it's girl band too, with, I can't remember the name, Black Pearl or something. I have no idea what the names are. Sorry.
Close enough.
I just don't know. But so the thing is, like, you know, that, I mean, how much does that, is that kind of like super atmospheric, superficial stuff that doesn't really, you know, like when you talk, like when people talk about Canada, like, we don't talk about Justin Bieber and Drake, even though they're Canadian, because it's so out of touch. You know what I mean? Like, it's, That's like a Coca-Cola business. Is K-pop the same way, or is there some chances of interaction in that industry?
Yes, there definitely are chances of interaction in that industry. I mean, Cosmos Midnight from Australia are a pretty good example of that. They certainly don't make K-pop, but they've just done a collaboration with BTS. So,
is that like a big goofy boy band too, or is that
BTS are the ones that were number one all over the world.
Oh well, so that's that whole entire crazy world still, right? So
there are weirdly, there are opportunities for non K-pop bands to get involved in that kind of stuff as well. I would say that whatever you think of K-pop, whether you're a fan of it or not, it certainly opened many doors in many places for
South Korea
of all other genres from South Korea. Yeah, I mean, K-pop's the driving force behind almost all of the export program.
Well, no, this is really important because this is kind of what I guess government funding people need to know, and I think export people need to realize is that if something drives like this, it's going to take the whole country with it, right? Like these guys have become. Like, it doesn't matter if people think the music is goofy or they love it or what. It doesn't matter what you think about it. It's created a whole entire world of South Korean identification, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. So, of course, it's a good thing. Like, kudos to South Korea. And, I mean, that's another thing. It's not really private industry K-pop. Like, it's government. Is that correct?
It's had... A lot of funding from the government. And continues to happen.
It's conspiracy theory, man. Trying to take over popular culture.
The government here, I mean, ever since I've been here, so almost 15 years, the government's been investing massively in promoting food, music, or Korean culture in general, all over the world. And basically the results of that have been seen over the last sort of 4 to 5 years, I guess.
Well, I mean, the first time I saw K-pop, and this is really crazy, man. The first time I saw K-pop was actually, Dick Clark's New Year celebration. And I think it was like 1999 or 2000. I can't remember, but it was a big year. And the main headlining act, you had like Mariah Carey and you had like Backstreet Boys or whatever. And then you had K-pop and I was like, or BTS or whatever, and I was like, what the hell is this? I had no idea. Like, I was like, what, so that was shocking. That was a shocking, because I was like, wow, there's a really huge Korean, South Korean band. Anyways, it's moved and South Korean movie won the Oscar, the movie of the year or whatever. So South Korea has been dominant in the popular entertainment industry for sure. Tell me about Busan Rock Festival. What's that all about?
Busan Rock Festival is
one second. So speaking about the Busan Rock Festival, let's travel down that path. How did you get involved in that? Is that because you had experience already with Xandere? Did these guys come to you? Did you go to them? How did that relationship start? And tell me more about the Busan Rock Festival.
So Busan Rock Festival is Korea's second longest running festival. I think there's Pentaport, which is up here in Seoul, and then Busan Rock Festival, which is down in the second city of Busan. We arranged a meeting with them just to see if they needed any help with their international booking and stuff. And it just so happened that we timed that meeting well, because the guys that had been doing it before had stopped for one reason or another, and they were looking for some other people to get involved. So I think we just timed that meeting with them perfectly.
Okay, how does the Busan Rock Festival go down? Like, how does it look? Is it multiple stages? Is there any independent bands, or is it just based on huge bands? Like, what kind of festival is it?
So it the last time we were able to do it, which was a couple of years ago now, we had three stages. So, you know, the main, the big main stage, which has all the headliners on and stuff, then a sub stage, and then also a kind of like, they call it a rookie stage. So I suppose that's for the more up and coming artists. And
okay. Yeah, so please keep telling me about the Busan Festival. Like, is it a major popular event? Is there independent bands? How are you working with them? Like, what, how are you booking international events? Are you booking major bands? Are you working with export offices? What's that aspect?
So, yeah, I mean, it deals with headline international acts, headline Korean acts, but there's also a lot of independent bands that play as well. The festival has some partnerships with other festivals in the region. For example, what's it called? Big Mountain Festival in Thailand. They do like an exchange thing. So Busan Festival will send a band there, and Big Mountain will send a band over here as well. So there's some international artists come through these exchange projects, and then the rest just get booked as they would do for any normal festival. You know, we reach out to the agents and find out who's touring in the area, and you know, who's available for the right kind of budget.
Okay. So you're what you're saying is like quite dynamic, and it ranges from independent to large. And right. How many stages?
So we had,
go ahead, please.
So last time we had the festival before this COVID nightmare started, we got involved pretty late in the day, but we managed to have the Chemical Brothers headlining.
Wow!
And then we had Courtney Barnett also playing on the main stage.
So that's globally famous. That's big, big, big budget stuff.
Right.
Did you book those acts?
Yeah, we booked the both of them. Courtney
Barnett. Okay, so they gave you the budget, and you said, okay, you know, let's go headhunt the biggest out there.
Exactly right. Right. Unfortunately, I don't have, you know, free reign over curating the lineup. Busan like to keep a certain amount of control on that, but we tend to go out and get lists of who's available and who we recommend, and then we discuss that with the festival directors and try and guide them down the right path.
So is this like a festival, like, is it a one-day thing, three-day thing? How long is it?
I mean, over the years, it's been all of those things. It was a two-day festival. Right, it was a two-day festival just before COVID struck. And then last year it was nothing, and this year it's going to be a sort of online hybrid thing.
Okay, interesting. So, I mean, obviously COVID's going to come to an end. I honestly just don't even talk about it on these interviews because it's going to be a thing of
the past. Good. Happy not to talk about it.
I just don't give a shit about it, to be honest. All right, so I'm diving in here because I'm trying to extract information from you. Like, you know, you were working for the Showcase Conference in Zandari. You were working, you know, as a stage manager, international, you know, consultant kind of thing, I guess you could say. You know, getting South Korean artists opportunities, but also letting people access the South Korean marketplace. Then you started, you know, you have your own independent businesses where you're bringing bands in, developing them, and then you're also helping with developing bands outside of South Korea. You're also working with the second biggest festival in South Korea. So how do I get into that? How do I tell me if I'm an export office or like if I'm trying to get a band inside of there, how am I trying to talk to you about that? How am I saying, hey, Patrick, like, I got these bands. I want to get them in the festival. Like, how do I do that? How do I get in the gate?
Are we talking sort of smaller artists, presumably, right? So we're not the ones I'd be going through agents for and stuff.
Because I mean, that's just money deal, right? That's just I think that's something more specifically you.
Right. Exactly. So, well, then I think, you know, a key point then is these showcase festivals, right? Be they showcase festivals here in Korea or anywhere else in the world that, you know, we might be attending, because those places for me at least are always the best places to meet people face to face, which, you know, is a key point here, because that's way more effective than just sending an email.
Now, let me ask you, just wait, I want to touch on that for a second. So if you see a band that you really like, you'll go to the organizers and say,
oh, hello, hello. I lost you.
You're back again. Yeah. So if you like a band, if you find a band that you really like, you'll go to the organizers and you'll say, hey guys, you know, I really like this band. Would you consider taking them? Does it kind of work that way?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we want to show them that they have some potential here. So that might be looking at previous releases and how they've done with streaming figures and stuff here, and, you know, if they've managed to get any press. And, you know, and this all kind of goes back to the getting your music distributed out here properly as well, right? Because we need to be able to, as well as make the recommendation, you know, these guys are cool, they make good music, or they've got a great live set, we also need to be able to pitch that they do have some sort of potential to grow out here as well.
Okay, you've got, so yeah, so you're trying to, like, other people are doing things, but you're trying to make smart decisions for the business side itself. So the thing is, like, people need to be aware, like, it's not just like, hey, I want to go and check out Korea, you know. And I was sending you a band before the COVID thing, and that whole arrangement was kind of off too, but the band really wanted to get inside of South Korea, check it out, and see if there was a marketplace they were interested in. So I do think there's some value to that, of course. I mean, you know, because if a band likes the place, or they find like, wow, this is the kind of place I want to develop, maybe they can start putting their energy and money there as well.
So. Oh yeah. And coming here is a legitimate way to check that out as well. You come here and do the shows and start to build up an audience based on your
live performance.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But that, you know, obviously that's not an easy thing to do financially, because that first time you come out here, there's not much pay, and it's an expensive trip.
It's an expensive trip. And yeah, you know, and I think that's important for bands to know, is that when you pick a place to go, just like South Korea, or if you go to Japan, or even if you come to Canada, like, or in Sweden, it's an investment. Like, you're trying to invest in your business, let's say. Right. So,
something we always try and tell artists that do come out and do that is to not just play a show in Seoul. I mean, a lot of artists do come here on the back of, you know, an Asian tour, and they just hit up a show in Seoul, and that's great. But I think there's much more value to be had by playing cities outside of Seoul. And you know, there's not many bands do that. So when international bands do go and play in these other cities outside of Seoul, the fans really get behind that. And I think it's a good opportunity to sort of make that core fan base, if you like, the people that will be there with you from the start.
Well, let's actually touch on that. What is it like? Or sorry, I'm calling South Korea Seoul now. What would it be like to tour in South Korea with your company? Like,
would you, for us?
Yeah. Mm. Go ahead.
Would we what? Okay.
Because for us, wait, just to touch on this before we go ahead.
Yeah.
Seoul is a metropolis. It's a massive city of like 11 million people or something, right? Like, it's
close to 20 million if you include like the satellite cities.
Yeah, so it's an amalgamation of a whole bunch of cities in one. Yeah. So you could literally tour in Seoul a whole bunch before you go in the rest of the country. Is that fair to say?
Seoul's a little bit strange. So 90% is not, I'm guesstimating figures here, but something like 90% of all live band music happens in one area of Seoul.
That's a university district there.
Right, at the Hongdae area. And then, you know, there's the Itaewon area, which is where you're going to get more of your electronic DJs, hip hop kind of stuff. So there's these kind of little zones within Seoul where different genres of music happen, and not much happens outside of them. I mean, I'm generalizing here a little bit, because, you know, there are pockets in other cities as well, but it's not like you could come here as a punk band and play, you know, in 10 different areas of Seoul. There's probably only one area in Seoul you can play. You could play 10 different shows, but they'd all be in that area.
Okay, that's super interesting. And what go ahead.
But you know, these days I think there's a concerted effort going on by lots of people, not just us, and lots of bands as well, to expand that zone outside of that one area and outside of Seoul as well. You know, a lot of bands pop down to Busan for a show, but not many bands go to these other cities. But in my experience, whenever we have taken them, be them local bands or international bands, the reception has always been really good, and the fans that you meet in these cities stick with you and are often the driving force between, you know, sort of pushing you up for the next time you come over.
Well, I had a, you know, I've been to Busan too. And I mean, Busan is an incredibly beautiful city. It's like super modern architecture in the downtown sector there. The buildings are wild. Like, they're really beautiful. Mm. The bridges, one of the most exciting things for me when I was in Busan is I took one of the tour buses, and the bridges, like, they're so high, and like climbing the bridge on the road there, it was like almost like a roller coaster, man. It's crazy. Like, I was like, wow, this is, you know. And then you're like, you're so high up above the bay, you know, above the ocean there. I mean, it was a really incredible experience. What other cities are you touring inside of South Korea?
So we usually try, if time and finances allow, we would usually start a tour in Seoul, and then we would probably go to four other cities and then come back and do another show in Seoul again. So it'd probably be sort of six shows between here and Busan and back again.
Six shows. Okay. So, and so are you going to any smaller towns? Are you incorporating, any kind of, what can I say? Like, are you sticking to the cities? Are you going to, is there small towns there? Is there like small communities? Mm. Like, do they like live shows?
Yeah. I mean, but the small towns here are still, you know, millions of people. They're not that small, but compared to Seoul. Yeah. So we usually try and go to sort of five different cities, and then one of them will be Seoul, and we'll probably do two shows in Seoul. So it's Seoul, two shows, and then four other cities, maybe five, depending on how things play out.
And let me talk about this too. Like, yeah, so I have a problem being from Canada that I relate everything like, oh, small town, like, we're, you know, and in Canada, small town is like, you know, 5,000 people or 2,000 people. You know, like, you know, 6 hours from a major city. And the rest of the world just doesn't work like that. And I always forget that. So even like, there's a lot of advantage even to all the rest of the communities. And so if you're touring and if you're trying to gather fan bases, like whether you're doing your PR and your marketing, but there's also a lot of advantage, you know, like spend time in South Korea itself, right? Spend time there, travel the areas. Mm. How are South Koreans with foreigners? Like, how have your, like, when a band shows up and they're from, you know, the United States or they're from the UK, like, is it exciting or is it like, whatever, you know, we know all about you guys? Like, is there still some kind of,
I think in Seoul, because everything happens in Seoul, everyone comes to Seoul.
Yeah.
There's less of the excitement, right? It's harder to it's harder to make a splash in Seoul perhaps than it would be in some of the smaller cities, because you know, all the big acts come to Seoul, literally no one goes anywhere else, so you're already standing out from the crowd just by making a trip to a city 3 hours away.
Okay, so that, I mean, that's kind of important information to know as well. So like, obviously, Seoul, it's, again, like, you know, we don't want to say it's saturated, but maybe it is, right? It's a huge city. It's a global city. But you think there's still special opportunities for foreign bands going into the other cities of South Korea? It's still kind of a special kind of occasion.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. Because one of the things I got, like, I talked to April, who does bookings in Japan, and one thing he really wanted to make really clear is like, hey, like, you're not special if you come to Japan. Like, stop thinking you're special, you know? Because maybe, way in the past, maybe it's more special, but she's like, Americans and Australians, and they need to get it out of their head. Like, hey, just because you're white, you're not special here.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely. The same applies here.
Okay,
but
okay.
But to stand out from the crowd, going to these other cities is an option, just because so few people do it. Including Korean bands in that. A lot of Korean bands don't tour any of these cities too. So by doing that, you're just standing out a little bit from the crowd.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. I mean, so, you know, let's just cover, I just want to kind of cover our bases here. Like, we're talking about development, and it sounds like you guys have quite a you have a regimen of a plan that's, you know, has the ability to evolve depending on the artist who's coming in. You have a major festival in your back pocket. You're also working with MuCon sometimes as well, which is the biggest showcase conference in South Korea, right? The government funded one.
I have worked for them in the past, but probably won't be this year.
Okay, now, and that's the reason why I wanted to talk to you, Patrick, not just because I like you and you're British, but I mean, it's also because you're sitting at the center, you're kind of a centerpiece, an access point to a lot of things that are South Korean. And I think it's, you know, I'm trying, one thing is, like, I'm doing these podcasts in the industry manner. Okay, so I'm doing artists. Yes, of course I am. But in the industry manner, I'm really trying to focus on people who have access to multiple things, or they're in a company that can do multiple things, because I think these are the people that the export offices need to be working with. Export offices are spending their money on going to an event to try to meet people and to try to network. And, you know, they spend an outrageous amount of money to be there for like 3 or 4 days. And then they all go home and they're like, oh yeah, so what are we doing now? And I think the thing is, more people, when they look at a country, they look at Japan, they look at South Korea, they look at India, they look at China, they have to start recognizing, like, hey, like, we need to create a business relationship with somebody there who has the knowledge, has the connections to not only, like, oh yeah, I can get you into a showcase, but has the ability to do development. I mean, I did one of these podcasts with the guy, the manager of Live Nation in Australia. And this is exactly what he's, you know, looking for as well. Like, he's looking for people on the ground that can, you know, he's looking for a one-stop shop for development. And I mean, let's face it, that's how Live Nation made their grade, you know, like, not only throwing massive shows, but when you work with a company like Live Nation, if they take you on, you know, there's 12 people there to make sure that they're going to build you as best they can so that they can make a profit, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, so it's really important. That's a business model. It doesn't mean it's the perfect business model, or it doesn't mean it's the, you know, the doctrine of, you know, the music industry, but it's good to kind of have someone like you in South Korea that, you know, someone can learn about and can make a plan in developing what they're doing. Does your company have any sort of information like this? Do you have a deck in any sort of way that you share about all the activities that you can do, or all the kind of the specialization of your company? Do you have something like that?
Yes, is the correct answer, I suppose.
Is that the website?
A lot of it's on the website now. We do have a deck. I'm just thinking, though, that we probably should update it. It's been such a mess for the last few years with the thing we've agreed not to speak about. I probably need to update it, but yes, we do have a deck and stuff. But it seems to me that every artist is different, right? And everyone needs something a little bit different. So I would usually just sit down with the artist or the manager and
sort of consult with them, right?
Exactly what it is they need, right? As opposed to just, because, you know, ultimately, I mean, we can do anything, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's really up to your imagination. It's finding out what it is that is the correct thing to do.
And yeah, I mean, because I mean, the thing is, if a band is going to invest in their business and invest in a territory, I mean, obviously they have to have a budget, right? They have to put together a budget. They have to, you know, they have to have some kind of timeline of what they're doing as well. I mean, yeah, there's so many components to this. Are you going to go over there and check it out? Are you coming here to build a career now? One of the really, I got to tell you about something, a really interesting thing. And I have brought this up in other interviews now, but Sweden has a really awesome program and I want to talk about it a bit. So I was talking to a company there yesterday called Talent Coach. And what those guys are doing is like, they're a government organization and they're funded by the region in this part of Sweden. And what they do is they basically raise artists. So like an independent artist, now you don't have to be a beginner, like you can be intermediate, you can be whatever, but you go to them and you're like, okay, so this is what I want to do. This is how I want to, this kind of artist I want to be. And then they look at you and they say, okay, how can we help structure you as an artist? So it's like develop your, you know, PR and marketing, or develop your stage show, or is it like, do you need work on, you know, what aspects are you lacking that can make you an international act? And if the artist works hard and if the artist develops himself, they'll support that artist. And then they also have budget to export them as well. So we got into a conversation. Now, they're also running Live at Heart Southeast, which is the Kalmar, the southern conference in Sweden, because we're going to have three. We have three now, right? Västerås, Kalmar, and Örebro. And what the idea is we started talking about yesterday is that what if we did exchanges like they do, you know, like they do for school? You know, like what if we had an exchange program where there was a company, say like yours in South Korea, and you talk to the government and, you know, Talent Coach talks to the government and we say, hey, why don't we exchange three artists? And why don't three artists from South Korea go and live in, you know, go and live in Sweden. Go and live in Sweden for a year. You know, why don't we take three artists from Sweden and go and live in South Korea for a year and let's try to develop these guys, because if you developed in Sweden, let's say, or if I did this in Canada, I don't want to leave the Canadian guys out because that's where all my salary comes from. But say we did this, so I'll just change it from Sweden. But say we did this in, you know, in Newfoundland and we say, okay, we're going to develop you in the Atlantic provinces of Canada. If a Korean, South Korean band, that would develop all of their PR, all of their marketing, their whole entire story would be based out of a place in another, you know, another part of the world, while taking their network, you know, with them, obviously, and vice versa. So what's the, like, and I'm trying to imagine the future, Patrick. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm talking about this right now. Because like the music industry is in such a, it's in such disorder and chaos. That's why I'm having these interviews, to talk to companies about how they're organizing themselves, what the benefits are. But like going into the future, is this something you think can be actualized? Is it something that could be beneficial, or do you have a better idea?
I don't think I have a better idea. No, it sounds like a pretty good idea. I mean, that's like the next level up from the tour exchanges I've been doing, I guess. There was a Swedish artist years ago called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Lassie Lindt, I think. Anyhow, he came over here in Korea and he lived here for a few years. Like, it was, you know, it was not part of any government funded thing. He just moved out here. And he got one of his songs like as a title track on a drama and stuff. And he had great success out here for a good few years. So yeah, I mean, there's a case in point of it working, I suppose.
Okay. I think it's important too, because I think the infrastructures of, you know, like once you're in Asia, you're so close to Asian countries. Right, it's another place.
So, it wouldn't even just be career. I mean, that's really just, once you're here, it's giving you the opportunity to develop yourself.
You're 45 minutes away from Japan, well. Right? 45-minute flight from Japan, half an hour flight from Japan. You're basically bordered with Russia and China.
Not far from Taiwan either.
Taiwan's a super Mandarin industry, though. Japan's a super Japanese industry. So that's kind of the thing, too. But in Canada and the United States, and Australia, you're so far from anywhere else that, it is interesting about Europe. Because, if a Asian band went and, say, lived in Sweden and did this under an organization that was helping them develop themselves, right? So they're arranging their material, their PR material. They're helping them with shows. They're developing their stage act. A European company is doing this. This is really something interesting about developing Asian artists in Europe, right? Because if you're in Sweden, you're a half an hour drive, depending where you are. So if you're in Kalmar, you're a half an hour flight from Berlin, or hour 45 minute flight from Berlin. You're right next to Denmark. You're right next to Norway, Finland. All of the northern countries. But you're an hour and a half flight from Paris. Europe. I don't think people realize how small. People forget how small Europe is. It might have a huge population, but everything is 45 minutes, 1 hour and a half flight away into all these different places, So I don't know, man, I'm kind of excited about going into 2022 with this idea of, I want to tap into school children like we've talked about in the past. I want to talk about having not just touring exchanges, but I want to get serious about people living in other countries.
I really like that idea. I think that's definitely an interesting proposition. Sign me up.
All right. I'll do that. I'll just start signing people up here. But the other thing is too, I'm kind of a big mouth. So what I'm doing is I'm just dropping these bombs right in the middle of, these kind of podcasts. So anyone can take them and, shove them up their ass. No, I'm just kidding. I it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
I like you as a person. I like what you're doing. I like you're organized. I think I'm excited to keep moving forward and introduce people to you and have them do business with you. I think that you're a guy who is, bent on, you want to make something successful and you care about what you're doing, and your business and your attitude represents that. So it's been a pleasure, knowing you. And I'm kind of excited to see what we can do in the future as well. So thanks a lot for joining me today. And thanks a lot for all the information. The PR stuff and the marketing stuff and the branding stuff that you brought up, it's really important. No one's even mentioned that kind of stuff in these interviews. So I thought that was really awesome stuff, I just think, I think you're one of these guys. I'm doing this tour all over the world, and you're one of these guys I think people should be talking to about the South Korean marketplace. So,
those are spectacularly kind words. Much appreciated.
You're supposed to say the check's in the mail.
I was going to do that off air.
Yeah. Fill those pockets, baby. Yeah. I'm going to have to start doing that. I'm going to be like, hey, man, but we'll see. We'll see how many people even care about the podcast. Patrick, take care of yourself. Thanks again. And I'll definitely be in touch with you.
Awesome. Been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Later.